Welcome to The Game's Gone with Tom Ross and my guest today. I'm absolutely thrilled. It's, former Birmingham and Aston Villa boss, but also Rangers and other clubs. It's Alex McLeish. Alex, how are we doing?
How you doing, Paul? Great. Look, it's fantastic to speak to you again and see
you. You look so well, my friend. How do you do it?
Hey, I'm just going to say the same thing about you.
Get a better camera.
Yeah.
just a little chat about, obviously, one thing I've always wanted to ask you is, you went to Aberdeen, but you're from Glasgow, Duke Street Hospital. I mean, for goodness sake, how come it was not Rangers as your club?
I know. It was just one of these things through kind of school days. A few of my pals were getting signed up S forums for Lake Rangers, Celtic, and some other teams. And I don't know, I was thinking, am I missing the boat? What am I doing wrong? And I took a stretch between 15 and 17, and Aberdeen kind of focused on me. They had a very good West of Scotland scout called Bobby Calder. And, you know, glasses, he always wore the suit, the shirt and tie, and the fedora, and just looked the part. And Bobby managed to take a lot of the boys from the West of Scotland up to Aberdeen, from under the noses of Rangers and Celtic. And anyway, I had to, it was the only thing that was in my head was to play professional football. That was my goal. And they said, sign you in apprenticeship terms. And I said, where do I sign? On the dot, right away. I'd been offered trials at Chelsea and places like that down in England due to the boys' club kind of scouting. But when Aberdeen said I could actually sign a contract, I said, that's it, I'm going to Aberdeen.
I mean, you had a great career at Aberdeen, but more about that to come. But you must have wanted to play for Rangers, your team.
I deliberately
didn't say Celtic.
Yeah, it's your team. I don't want to get a Celtic one. But yes, Tom, I would love to played for my boyhood team, but you know, gone up to Aberdeen, and we were part of an incredible era with an incredible manager. And you know, over the piece I had five or six managers at Aberdeen, and you know, it was my obviously the best careers were with Sir Alex Ferguson.
I think it was a Celtic man gave you a debut, wasn't it? Big Caesar.
It was Caesar, Big Billy Neil. He was just one of my hero centre halves in football. And Billy included me in the squad for the festive kind of games. And I thought, oh, I'm just coming in there for a bit of experience. I was still short of my 19th birthday, 12 days short. And so 2nd of January,1st of January, we're going for training. And Billy said, I said, Happy New Year, boss. And he says, Happy New Year yourself, big man. You're playing tomorrow in the 2nd of January against Dundee United. And I said, all of a sudden, why? You know, what's happened? And two of the players, two centre-halves, ironically enough, not Willie Miller, but the guys that played beside Willie Garner, and there was a guy, Bobby Glennie, I don't think they'll mind me dropping them in it. They had a New Year drink, and and Billy found out about it, and immediately dropped them and said, you're out of the squad. Alec McLeish will make his debut on the 2nd of January.
Did you win?
We won 1-0. Before a crowd of 25,000, a full house at Pittodrie against our new firm rivals, Dundee United.
You mentioned there, centre-half. I mean, you and Willie Miller formed hell of a partnership, didn't you?
We just had a great telepathy. Willie was great to, for me as a young kid to go in and play beside him. I had the fortune of watching him in a few of the games, and his consistency was just absolutely fantastic. And And then to finally be playing beside him, you know, he wasn't a moaner as such, you know, he would, you know, encourage me, but didn't he say much? He just led by example.
Yeah. I mean, I was reading, I'm sure my memory's right, I was reading that you actually played midfield at times.
Yeah. So, Alex, when Billy gave me that debut, we won 1-0. Said I did okay. I did pretty well. I was really proud. I thought, that's me in the first team now. And Billy took me into his office before the next game and said, listen, I'm going to put you back in the reserves. I went, what? I can't believe it. I had a great debut and everything was good. You know, great headlines and stuff, boss. Why? And he said, listen, I want to blood you. I don't want to rush you right away because it's a lot of pressure. He says, and they too get punished for a certain reason, but I'm bringing them back. And I don't think I played for Billy again. And he left that following summer. He was only at Aberdeen for a year, and the call of Celtic was too great. And he went back there. And then that's when Alec Ferguson came in. I wasn't in the first team at the start with Sir Alex. And then one day, he wanted me to play against Celtic in a cup tie at Celtic Park. And he told me, I'm playing midfield. I've got the two Willies at the back, Willie Garner, Willie Miller. I'm quite happy with defence just now. He said, but I can see you doing a job in midfield. And I thought it was a kind of precursor for holding midfield players. Mm. And he said, you know, I want you to be a scarf around Tommy Burns' neck. So he wanted me to man mark Tommy Burns out of the game. And we won that cup tie that night. And my kind of career was born. And I started to play in midfield under Sir Alex for a considerable while before Garner broke his leg or something, Big Willie.
Mm. I mean, 3 league titles, 5 Scottish Cups, 3 league cups, UEFA Cup, or as it was then, the Cup Winners' Cup, UEFA Super Cup. I mean, for goodness sake, that was hell of an Aberdeen team.
What a team, Tom. We took a lesson. We got some lessons in Europe. We you know, round about the... we won the league in 80, so 81, we were in the Champions League against a certain team called Liverpool. Mm. At that time, we had Kenny, Souness and Hansen, you know, a lot of Scots guys there, and a super fantastic Liverpool team. They came to Pittodrie, and Graham Souness tells a good story about it, that they, in that dressing room, Liverpool players going, Aberdeen, we'll batter them, and that, you know, all the English-based guys. He says, I'm telling you guys, if you take this for granted and we don't beat them, I'll never hear the end of this. And Souness says, every day preaching, him and Kenny and Hansen saying, we've got to win this. We cannot lose this game. So they came to Pittodrie, Terry McDermott scored the winner, 1-0, and then we went to Anfield and get stuffed 4-0. But what an education.
What a team they were.
And they won the European Cup that year. So we were beaten by the winners, and they beat Real Madrid in the final with Kennedy. No, Kennedy, the fullback. What was the left back's name? Anyway, he scored the winner.
Tommy Smith played fullback, didn't he, at times?
Not in that era. That was the kind of...
Later, wasn't it?
Left back, screaming, he had a brilliant left peg and he smashed one in the top corner for...
It'll come to me before long.
We're getting old, Tom. We're getting old.
You're getting old. You're talking about, though, that team.
But we learned the lessons, and 2 years later we grew and grew. And as you say, we won the European Cup Winners' Cup against Real Madrid, the same team Liverpool beat. And then we won the Super Cup against the European champions, which was Hamburg. You know, Keegan was there at the time. And we were kind of officially crowned the top team in Europe. And, you know, rightly so. We were accepting it.
I mean, to get 3 league titles at a time when Celtic and Rangers were almost foregone conclusions, what was it about, Sir Alex? Sum him up. What was it about? Not only at Aberdeen, but then at Man U. What is it about the man?
I was relentless, you know, and he even, you know, he would remember every single fact that happened on the pitch. And the first team, when I wasn't in the team at the beginning, I can remember some of them muttering because he was comparing them to players in his former team, St Mirren.
St Mirren, yeah.
He had Frank McGarvey and Jackie Copeland, a centre-half, and he was comparing Willie to Jackie Copeland, and Willie was taking umbrage at that, and some of the boys were taking umbrage at being constantly being told that the St Mirren players were better, and there was nearly a revolt. But Sir Alex obviously had his intelligence to spot that, oh, wait a minute, I'm maybe doing this the wrong way. And he got them on side. They started to, you know, it wasn't overnight, you know, it took a wee while for him to get, you know, consistency. And then he added little bits and pieces to the team. And, you know, goal scorer, McGee came, and I'm sure it was Sir Alex that brought McGee.
Yeah.
And Rhys Strax was already there because Billy McNeil had brought Gordon to the club, and Gordon hadn't found his best form with Billy, but he certainly found it with Sir Alex. And he drove everybody. He drove you. Obviously, in those days, Tom, you wouldn't get away with it now. You know, the shouting and screaming at half time and things like that. And no, I remember Gordon Strachan and at half time in a game in, oh God, was it Romania? We were 2-0 down at half time, and the gaffer went absolutely mental, you know. And we were all waiting for a cup of tea, and he's hammered this big urn and a few cups smashed against the wall above me and Miller. He'd been slagging Gordon off, you know, and Gordon. Gordon, well, you know, it was always the creative players who really had a go at it. And it's just like, you know, what you bloody doing out there, you know? And then the second half, we go out, we score two goals, and it's two each. We take them back to Jordan, we beat them. But the thing was, in the second half, and you're thinking nowadays, if you shout like that at a player nowadays, they wouldn't go out. They just...
in tears.
play. But Gordon went out in the second half and ended up man of the match.
I mean, Gordon came, obviously, was at Coventry. You had Eric Black, who was at Birmingham, and Mark McGee, who ended up at Wolves, yourself, who came there. A lot of that team went on to get involved in coaching and management down here at the top level.
Yeah. We learned a lot from the master, you know, and I think it was just ordained that we wanted to continue our careers in football at some level of coaching or management.
Well, that was a wonderful time for you. Scotland, I mean, I can't remember exactly, but I know you're the second highest Aberdeen appearance maker, I think, behind Willie, I think.
That'll be probably quite accurate. Then
Scotland, I think you're the second most capped player for Scotland, 77 caps.
Yeah, Scotland. I don't think I'm second. I'm probably doing about fourth or fifth.
Now are you?
Because I think Darren Fletcher beat me.
Right. Okay.
And Jim Leighton was up there. Kenny was up there.
How good was he, Kenny Dalglish?
If I'd only get one cap for Scotland, I would have been so proud. But
sure. How good was Kenny Dalglish?
Yeah, he was. I would rate him the best player that I played with. You know, and
the best.
The best, Kenny.
Wow.
Kenny. I would rate him the best player that I wore a jersey in the same team as, and it was the national team, and some of the. You know, his play was fantastic. Some of the goals he scored, Curlers, top corner in Belgium, a couple of goals, and an assist from me in Israel. Kenny scored the winner. He what a talent. And that was probably the best player that I played with.
I remember staying with my brother in Malaga and watching you in 82 against the best atmosphere I've ever been at a game, Brazil. And I saw you beat Switzerland? New Zealand?
No, New Zealand we beat 5-2.
Yeah, and then it was Brazil, and then it was Russia.
Yes, yeah.
I stayed in Malaga and went to all three games. And I mean, the Brazil game, I mean, look at that team. I mean, but you upset them, and you were wrong to upset them when you took the lead, Neri.
That's right. I was on the bench that night. I get on in the last 5 minutes or something, but the game was already done by then. But Neri gave them, well, they jolted them into action, you know, because I think they thought they could just we'll mess about for a wee while, and then we'll then just score as we like. But Davy Neri jolted them into early action by hitting a screamer. And then, of course, Brazil went to town on us. What a great team they were at that time. It's amazing how they didn't win that World Cup.
Amazing. Absolutely. Absolutely. Why, and I've got to ask you this, why are Scotland always, do they always fail at international level, you know, when it comes to the big, big, getting there? I mean, they've done well to qualify Argentina, and we saw the goal of the century, I think, there from Weahchi at Argentina. But what is it about Scotland?
I know we had so many near misses, you know, and getting qualification. And when we had points in the bag in someone's, and but we always had to wait to the last game when somebody else was playing, and we could go through in goal difference. But it just never happened, and we never made that next step from the group stage into the next level, and that was always a little bit of a bugbear and something that I wish we could have done. But you know, in honesty, playing at three World Cups was just
amazing.
The things that kids dream of, you know? So.
Tell, I mean, who were the when you played? Who were the ones you played with that were like the always the ones who were in trouble? Who were the ones that were always the, I don't know, the funny guys or whatever? Who were the ones you played with?
Got away, but my debut I made against Portugal, and that was in midfield. You know, Jockstein picked me as a midfielder because I'd been doing well with Alec Ferguson at Aberdeen, and he says, I'm going to play in midfield beside Archie Gemmell. We beat Portugal 4-1 at Hampden that night, and you know, to play with Archie, and you know, he was at the peak of his career at the time, and it was, you know, inspirational to see a lot of these players. Then of course, you know, Gary Mack, I was kind of getting to end of my career, there was young boys like Gary Mack come in. But John Watt, remember John?
Yeah.
The Ipswich midfielder who was great coming late in the box and scoring goals. And of course, you know, the McCoys, the Mo Johnstons.
Some great players, Alex.
Yeah, Peter Weir from Aberdeen, Jim Bett from Aberdeen. And as I said, we had a few Rangers boys, Richard Gough. It was a great teammate, Big Roy Aitken, the Celtic captain. And then, you know, of course, the Anglos like Graham Souness. Gordon McQueen was there or thereabouts in my very first forays with the Scottish national team. Hmm. But some wonderful players, Eddie Gray as well. Frank Gray, I didn't play with Eddie.
Yeah, amazing. And it's moving on to your management career, and I mean, you were very, very successful at Rangers. I mean, at a time again when Celtic, I mean, I think two Scottish Cups, won the league three times. You got two doubles, a treble, three League Cups. At a time when Celtic were pretty dominant. I mean, that was a real battle. Season in, season out, you were really battling with Celtic.
It was just an amazing era because I was quite amazed that, well, I use that word amazed again when I got a phone call from David Murray, the Rangers owner, and said his first line was, I bet you didn't think you'd get this call. And I thought, well, I must admit, no. I thought you would be going for foreign coaches all the time, because the guy in charge, the incumbent at that time, was Dick Advocaat. But Dick just couldn't get any more out of the squad. They'd had enough of his voice or whatever, and the Celtic were dominating them. Martin O'Neill had built a really strong Celtic team. And when you think of it in recent weeks, Henrik Larsson said he played in the Premier League with Man United, but he said that Celtic team could easily have been in the top four in England. And I thought, well, Henrik would need to include Rangers in that top four, because in my time there, we had great battles against Celtic, and we were two teams that were so close that two championships went right to the wire.
Well, you talk about another great player there, Henrik Larsson. So how did you end up at Birmingham? How did that all happen?
Birmingham, when I was in the Scotland job and we had our last kind of chance to qualify for the Euros, I think it was, and it was against Italy. We knew if we won the game, then Italy wouldn't go to the Euros and we would. We got ourselves into a good position because of beating France twice. Walter Smith presided over the first win and I was there for the second one because Walter had gone back to Rangers. I'm trying to recap. Yeah, the Birmingham thing, when just before I left the Scotland job, and before that Italy game, I was getting calls from some clubs in England, agents were saying, would you like, there's a few teams in England, fancy you to come down. I said, listen, I am not interested. I'm certain that we're going to go to the European finals. And as a result of that, I'm not interested in talking about any English Premier League club before the Scotland thing is over. And of course, we lost the game to Italy and we were out. And I knew that I was going to be having to wait another 6 or 7 months before the competition for the World Cup started. Then I started to get phone calls when that Italy game was out of the way. Birmingham was one. And I spoke to Sir Alex about two or three of the teams that had phoned, and he romantically loved the fact that I got the call from Birmingham, because his dad worked in Birmingham. Sir Alex, and he said, it's a great place. I've always had a soft spot for Birmingham City. And he says, you should go there, I think that would be a good one for you. And, it's by all accounts, run a good club there. And so that was it, I said, right, let's talk to Birmingham. And I got that job, and then we had a kind of step backwards to go two forward. And that was, again, the lessons of recruitment, and which we'll probably come to.
Well, absolutely. Relegation first season.
We weren't in a good position, to be honest.
I was going to say, you might have been on the cards anyway.
I think we didn't get the players we wanted in the January window. Dave Sullivan and David Gold tried really hard to get players in the door. I had Gary, what's his name? Gary from Aston Villa, who went to Bolton. England centre back.
Oh, Southgate. No. Gary Cahill.
But Gary Cahill, I can never get that name right. Gary Cahill. Is it Cahill? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how you pronounce it.
Yeah.
So Gary, I had him in Karen Brady's box we're looking out to the pitch, and I said, listen, you know, we're just missing a wee bit of legs at the back, you know, centre back position, and you'd be great here, keep us up, and we'll go far, we'll really rock it next year and stuff. And he said, he ended up signing for Bolton, and I thought, right, possibly more money. But the other side of it was that he didn't want to be seen as an Aston Villa reject. Because he thinks that's how he would have been viewed. And, you know, to be fair, he's had a magnificent career, Big Cahill.
Unbelievable.
And he's made the right choices, you know, for him personally. But, you know, it could still have been he was destined to become a great player, so he could still have done that with Birmingham.
But the following season, you end up ninth.
Yeah.
What made the big difference?
Well, again, Tom, recruitment. We
sorry, you got promotion, not ninth. I think you got promotion, didn't you? The following season.
Yeah, we got promotion, and we. Yeah.
Last day of the season at Reading.
Down in the Championship, yeah, because we, in terms of the recruitment for that campaign, was more free transfers.
Yeah.
And we concentrated on guys who had played in the Premier League before, maybe, you know, getting towards the latter years of their careers. Carsley, you know, for instance, yeah. Amber Lee and Phillips came, Ree Kevin, and, you know, guys like that who had been around the block. And, you know, not every one of them worked, but certainly we got the right blend. And we actually, you know, we started a wee bit near the end, and, you know, there was stuff in the programme. You know, Karen said something in the national newspaper, The Sun, about, you know, we were in a sticky kind of situation. I said, well, you're better not doing that publicly. I spoke to the directors and I said, look, please don't talk about the team publicly unless you're painting a positive picture, you know, because we don't want to be going into games with negative kind of thoughts. And so they agreed, and Karen came to the office and she says, yeah, no problem, we'll let you get on with it. And I don't think we were ever out of the top three, Tom, no. The whole season.
No, I remember that final game. We had a final day.
Yeah, in Reading, I know, and Kevin scored. And we actually started a wee bit just before. We had a wee spell where we did 3 or 4 points out of 12 or something. But again, we were still up there and we were still in with the shout, and we focused on the positive, and, you know, we went down to Reading and got that fantastic result, and everybody was euphoric, you know.
And I think the following season, as I was referring to, ninth. That's the highest they've ever been.
Wow, was it?
Premier League, yeah, highest Premier League finish.
Yeah, so we did a fair wee bit of recruitment in the summer. Scott Dan, I nearly lost him because he was just about to sign for us, and then all of a sudden, I don't know, something wasn't right with his agent in the contract. And I was abroad and I phoned Karen, and she says, oh, I'll sort it, you know. So it was great, she did. And Scott came to the Blues, and we had a great player for a couple of seasons, you know. And he, as you know, half the season he missed when he got injured when the year we won the Carling Cup. But Scott Dan came, so there was, you know, you're getting the players you wanted to come. Mm. There was others as well, you know, and Stevie Carr as well, coming out of retirement, was just absolutely key. You know, unsung heroes like, you know, Keith Fahey coming, and Ireland, and then we had, you know, as you said, that brilliant season, and when we finished ninth, And I don't think I changed the team for about 13 games in a row or something. We had a long run of unbeaten games, and I don't care what anybody. I know that it's to keep the morale of the squad. You have to try and rotate a little bit, but we just kind of went through that spell of I'm just keeping the same team. I feel lucky about it, and then of course it does come to a halt at some time.
I think then you brought a lad who'd played for Rangers, of course, Ferguson.
Yes.
And he made a big difference in midfield as well.
Brilliant. Barry was a guy who, a player who could take the ball in any stadium in the world and not be intimidated. Mm-hmm. You know, so confident about his ability. And, that was a very strong footballer mentally for the Blues, and also the season they had was tremendous.
And McFadden and people like that. I mean, this was a good side you put together.
Yeah, and I wanted even more. You know, there was obviously later on when we won the cup and then relegated. At the start of that season, I asked for more players. I needed more strikers. I needed a couple of Bobby Zamora. I expressed an interest that he would come up to Birmingham. And, you know, he was in my plans for the start of that 2010-11 season. And, there was a couple of players, an Italian player from one of the from Serie A, but in the islands, you know, down below Italy. That was two players who would have enhanced it big time. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, we were scrambling, trying to get strikers on the field.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just because, you know, a week ago, the anniversary of the Carling Cup win.
Yeah. And,
I mean, that was just the most amazing cup run. I mean, I know you've won a lot of cups and trophies and World Cup you've been in and all that. That was just, for Birmingham City fans, did you realise how important that was, never having won a major, major trophy, apart from winning the League Cup once when the big teams weren't in it? But this was the first, and they'd been badly let down by the referee in the Worthington Cup final a few years before. This was their day. Did you understand that? Did you feel that?
Yeah, it did. Certainly the noise they made that day was just incredible, you know. Incredible for your own confidence and belief in the club, and I don't think it'd been hard to imagine that there was the only one that probably usurped it was Rangers fans when in Helicopter Sunday when they heard that Celtic had lost a goal in another game which impacted on us winning the league. So the Blues fans at Wembley that day, I was so proud to give those fans.
When did you start thinking? I mean, you came back from West Ham trailing. You went further behind. I mean, when did you actually... the character and the belief and the mental strength of the lads showed through in that cup run, didn't it? Coming from behind to beat West Ham, who are a good side, beating Villa in the quarterfinals before that. I mean, this was a special team spirit.
Yeah, we did have a great dressing room and great spirit. You know, the characters like Ferguson and Boyer and Stevie Carr and all these great wind ups and some veterans in there, the Ridgewells, you know, and to win the Carling Cup was. It's got to be up there with all the best, the best achievements I feel that I've had in my career, because going to the game, we'd started with some of the smaller clubs, Tom. Is that right? I think Brentford was one of them. Milton Keynes Dons. We scraped the victory against Brentford, I think, with a late penalty, Kevin Phillips. And That's when you big, you know, Aberdeen back in the day when we scraped through some early rounds.
Yeah.
We kind of, oh, everybody would say after the game, our name's on that cup, guys. You know, we were so lucky there. We didn't play well today. We did this. And I think we kind of felt that in the Brentford game, that maybe this was going to be a cup run extraordinaire. And it turned out that way.
Well, Rochdale, Milton Keynes, and then Brentford. And Brentford, of course, you had to go to extra time to win it.
That's right. That's right. And Kevin, I think, come on and got us. We were out, and if it wasn't for Kevin scoring the equaliser, and I think that's what took it to, was it extra time? And it ends.
But it was...
I mean, it
was such a... when did you feel... When did you think, as an experienced manager and player, when did you think, you know, we could win this? You know, what round was that? Was it after you beat West Ham? When did you think, these lads have got a chance?
Well, we even, you know, even through that game against Brentford, we thought, right, guys, if we're carrying that kind of luck, our name's on that blooming cup, you know? So... There was those kind of quirky statements coming out at that time, but you knew you were going to be meeting teams that had much higher quality. But there's no doubt that when we beat Aston Villa, we thought we would win it.
Who were the characters in that dressing room? The characters. I know you had experience, but who were the characters?
Well, you know, Boyer had a really strong voice. You know, Barry Ferguson was a leader. Stevie Carr also. And then you had the guys like Ridgewell would lighten the moods and things like that. Good, easygoing guys. You know, that you need a mixture of everything. You know, likes of Boyer, because before the semi-final, I think, against West Ham, we played Man United and lost at Old Trafford, and I played one of the young kids in the game, Jordan.
Jordan.
And we took a wee bit of a beating. And Bo actually had a dig at the end of the game because he wasn't playing. And, kids, you know, and I said, listen, and I had to grab him and take him privately, and I said, look, I made a decision that I need your legs for the cup game on Wednesday. And I'm sorry I didn't play at Old Trafford. I know that's where you like to showcase and things like that, but so Bo, you know, from being annoyed, and I spoke to him for like 10 seconds and told him that, oh, great. See you Monday then, Gaffer, you know? So that was it, you know? But he was a highly charged individual, and he was, you know, brilliant for us. You see the damage he done when he was in the blue shirt.
For sure. Nobody gave you a prayer in the final outside of your dressing room. They'd got, I mean, even I think Arsene Wenger had chosen an injured player to pick the cup up and all this sort of stuff. I mean, they'd got one of their top players was injured. I'm just trying to know who it was. Cesc Fabregas was injured.
The Fabregas one, as I remember it, I think were Arsenal not, did they not have a Champions League game in midweek and they decided not, or in 10 days or something, they decided not to play Fabregas and... I know that he was carrying a wee injury, but I think Fabregas wanted to play in the final, but Arsene decided.
Arsene said he would pick the cup up if they won, and I think
the choice he gave him. He says, "Look, you're not playing, but you can pick the cup up." So,
How difficult was it managing somebody like Big Sigic, who scored some massive goals for you, didn't he?
He did. And, you know, after the cup final, we never really had him for the rest of the season. But Zigic was a work in progress when he first came. I watched him playing for his country and in a World Cup qualification game when it was the South African World Cup in 2010. And they won 6 this final game, 6-1 or something like that. But can't remember who they were playing, but Zigic scored. He scored a goal. But he kept coming towards the ball all the time. And I know that obviously in Europe and European style of football is that it's all tippy-tippy build-up, and it's, which is a big feature of the game now, big time. But he was coming to the ball all the time, and I thought, we've not got the players that, you know, can give him that kind of setting. Mm. We have to try and get to the strength of this guy who's 6 foot. What was he? 6'7"?
6'7".
6'7". And I said, we've got to get this guy to be, not a bulldozer, because he wasn't like that. He had a little bit of gentleness about him. We had to say one or two things to him to get him going and get him in the box and get people running off him. Craig Gardner profited brilliantly running off him, and of course Lee Bowyer. I'm sure it was around about October, because before I really got him into the groove of how to play and stay, getting that box, getting in. It wasn't just about kicking the ball long. We passed it and we got to good areas, and when we got a moment, then you'd fling it in. If you fling in 10, 20 crosses, then you're going to profit with 2 or 3 every game, headers on target or something, then it's absolutely worth doing.
Now,
and Ziggy scored a few, as you said, a few goals for us. We won at Stoke. We won some really close games, you know, and Zigic getting us the winner in 3 or 4 occasions.
Absolutely. Now, this is Blues fans, this is always the dilemma they're talking about. Would you have rather stayed up or won the Carling Cup? Not a question for me. However, did the Carling Cup affect your fight to stay up? Because there were still 12 games to go after the final.
Yeah, well, here's how that unfolded. Now, no, I never see anybody writing about this. You know that Obafemi Martins scored the winner.
Yeah.
Zigic scored the first goal. You know how many games did they play in those last 12 games?
I can find out, but I don't know.
I don't think any. You know, Zigic played... And in the following game, the West Brom game, that was like a wet blanket for us all. Yeah. Remember, the week after the cup final. But he had a groin problem. And I believe that he never played another game that season after that West Brom game. I also know that Obafemi had a stress fracture in his shin and couldn't play for the rest of the season either. So you're not going to tell me that those two guys between them wouldn't have got another 2 or 3 goals that would have been crucial to us.
Absolutely.
And Cameron Jerome missed, I think, the last couple of months and with an injury. And James McFadden was out for the whole season. And we had Kevin Phillips, 39 years of age, and Matt Derbyshire. And Alexander Klebb was kind of up and down a wee bit in terms of injuries and being ready. So that was the 3 strikers we had left. Mm-hmm. And we never got a rhythm or a groove at all, really, to score goals. And if I look back, I should probably have parked the bus a few times rather than trying to win games, you know?
Yeah.
But that wasn't the style that I wanted for the fans. And, you know, I thought, right, if we're going to not score goals, we want to at least, it's not for the want of not trying to score goals. But so we really struggled in that department when Zigic and Obafemi never played again after the cup final.
So, Carson Young owned the club then before he sold to TTA. Carson Young, Peter Panner. How was your relationship with Peter Panner?
It was fine, you know. I had a good, I always tried to, you could call it manage up the way, you know. Your bosses, I always tried to give them total respect, but also tried to get a good relationship with them. And so, therefore, there was never any animosity between any of us, you know, the three of us, and Peter Panu and Carson. There was always a good relationship. And, you know, unfortunately, when you don't do the recruitment right, then it comes back to biting the bum.
Mm. So if you had, if that was good, why did you leave? Because you left, didn't you? You weren't sacked, you quit.
No, because that was a different era, and it was a different mindset. We were then officially in the Championship again. And I was told that there was a couple of players coming in. And I said, whoa, wait a minute. I don't approve of these players. You know, I didn't want to bring those players in. And I said, you're taking my powers away from me. And, you know, I said, well, you know, this is not a way that I would expect to coach and manage the club. And if there's going to be a different style in terms of recruitment, because, you know, as I said to you, in that kind of day in my managerial career, I wanted to make sure I knew every player that was coming off by heart. Mm-hmm. And the ones that I was told that were coming, you know, I wasn't really for that, you know. And I felt that was me getting a bit of power taken away.
Did you ever realise, when you moved to Villa, did you ever realise there would be such a backlash from both clubs' fans?
No, I suppose you can probably anticipate, yes, that there would be something, but I always had the confidence in myself that I can change their minds. You know, no, okay, it would have been hard to, you know, change the Blues minds, because the Blues fans' minds. You know, I've explained why it was difficult for me to stay on. You know, just not getting the control that I felt that, you know, I was entitled to. And then, you know, going across to Aston Villa, which, you know, I looked at it as I'm a boy from Scotland. I never supported Birmingham or Aston Villa during my career, so why shouldn't I be manager of both teams at some stage? You do have to realise that it's not only Rangers and Celtic who have got massive rivalry. The Villa and Blues rivalry was, you know, as fierce. It was as fierce. And I felt uneasy in my year at Villa. It was difficult because we had a plan to stay as competitive as possible in League A. And in League B, we had to come down the table, and that was in terms of finance. So there was a financial plan, and there was a strategy for the team to finish as high as they could. But again, the recruitment was very low, and I said to the club, I think we at the end of the year I made the targets that the club were asking me to make.
Does that mean in terms of sales, getting rid of players, raising money?
In terms of taking a certain amount off the total that had been spent the year before.
So you're trying to, just to get this absolutely clear, you've got a club in the Premier League you're trying to make successful, and on the other hand...
In the Premier League. You just can't do that now. You can't stay in the Premier League if you do that now.
On the other hand, you've got the club saying you've got to get rid, you've got to reduce the wages bill and all that sort of stuff, and still try and win games on the... Is that how difficult it was? Was that your problems? But you still stayed up, didn't you, from memory?
Stayed up. But I mean, it was remarkable, when especially when I wasn't feeling the feelings I had when I was managing at Birmingham, and obviously the good times. Then you always feel empowered, and you feel confident. So it was hard on the mental side, and in terms of, yeah, I've got to get the wages down to a certain amount by the end of the season while keeping competitive in the Premier League. And, you know, at the end of the season, I could have actually have made a case and says, well, I've done everything that you asked. But at the same time, it just wasn't really working, you know, the dynamic. And I certainly wasn't enjoying, you know, my year in terms of traveling to work. I was feeling the knots in the stomach, you know. Wee Strax and I had loads of chats about things like that, you know, when you're fighting against, you know, adversity. Yeah. And listen, we're all big, strong guys, but you're only human, you know. And yeah. And, you know, I remember Jose Mourinho when he left Man United, and Shrevesy interviewed him and said, he says, but you, Jose Mourinho, you know, why? He said, you feel that? And Jose says, yes, I am a man. I am like you. I am just a man.
Yeah.
So I'm just telling you, I'm just a man. I had a really tough season.
How disappointing, or angry, if you like, were you that you actually did what was asked,
mm-hmm,
and still out the door?
Yeah, I could have. I guess if I was making a case of it, then I would probably win my case. But to be honest, I felt it was right for me to leave.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, because it wasn't fulfilling. I wasn't enjoying it, and you know, it was a very tough season. I was still privileged to be in a Premier League club, and you know, don't get me wrong, I don't want people to look at him feeling sorry for himself. But I felt that, you know, when the club said, "Look, we're going to make a change," and I said, okay, right, shake hands on it and let's go. Let's do that. If I made a case, then I'd probably have won. But what's the point? You know, what's the point of staying when you're not a popular kind of choice?
From that moment, though, Forrest, you went abroad. I don't know, but it seems like it was never, ever the same again for you.
No, it definitely wasn't. And when I went to Forest, then it was for a small period of time. But again, I didn't feel I was in full control. And then the Belgian thing was great. It was a fantastic experience. I really enjoyed going to Belgium, you know, seeing their academies and the brilliance of the Belgian national team, you know, and where all these kids were coming from. So Alec Ray and I had a fantastic year in Genk. And, you know, again, you could say we didn't do too bad a job, especially with, again, nothing to spend. And they said they were going through a spell of, if I was to sell somebody, then I would get the money from that to buy somebody else. So, yeah, a wee bit of the the recruitment side again. I actually went for, you know, one of the strikers, Murray. You know, big Murray at Brighton.
Yeah, Murray. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he was a Crystal Palace player at the time, and I phoned
Murray. Yeah.
I phoned about Glenn Murray, and because he would have certainly.
I saw him a few weeks back. He's got goals in him, hasn't he? Just a natural. Glenn Murray.
He would have been fantastic for us because, again, you know, here's the violin out again. Tom, our striker, our main striker, got injured in the January break in Belgium, and he never played the rest of the season. And so we just finished marginally out of the top six, and we still went for a European place with other teams below, and we didn't make it. We just weren't strong enough. But that was a great experience, Belgium, and I've got good feelings about Genk, and I've been back a few times, and they have invited me back, and they actually asked me one of the seasons when they were managerless if I would come and do a short spell for them. But that was then. This is now.
Tell us about who's the craziest player you've had to manage.
Craziest. Oh, God. Oh, what a question that is.
Because you and Roy and that were always good for a laugh, always had the banter. Who was the big banter merchant then that played for you as a player? Who was the banter person?
Well, they all had different kind of personalities, you know. There was never really, a standout. You know, Ferguson would have his Glasgow vernacular, and you had the guys that were strong voices in the dressing room, Stevie Carr, you know, when they felt somebody wasn't pulling their weight, there was no filter, you know, he just launched right into them and stuff, you know, it was a pretty strong bunch, you know, that we had. But it's hard to remember. Any of the real characters. You know, one of the little things in the cup final was when Zigic played against this is not a funny thing, but that Zigic played against Villa in a league game, and we drew one each, but right in the last minute there was a ball went up to him, and the Villa goalie jumped with him and he shrunk his neck, and he would have scored otherwise. The ball scrambled just past the post, and then the referee blew for full time. We'd have won it right on the whistle. It was at St Andrews. And then I remember that, and I showed him the video of it. About 5 minutes before he went for the warm-up in the cup final. And I said, "Biggin, you're 6'7". If you shrink your neck, the goalie's going to be able to get above you. But if you keep your neck high, then he's either going to cause punch you in the head and you'll get a penalty, or else you'll beat him." And that was, and think of the first goal against Arsenal.
Exactly.
And then I'm sitting in the, honestly, I'm on the bench and I'm going, "Oh, well, I told him to do that, you know." I told him to keep that neck stretched, you know, because Roger Johnson flicked the ball on and the big end kept his neck upright and beat the goalkeeper. So, thank God we get some tactics right.
Just finally, any regrets in your career?
You'll always wonder, you know. I had chances to come to England when I was a player at Aberdeen, but it wasn't so easy getting out of there, you know, at the end of your contracts, you couldn't just walk out the way you can now. You're a free transfer kind of thing. So, that was the thing I'll always wonder about is some of the, you know, if I could have had a chance in England. I did, have some approaches from Tottenham Hotspur and Wolves and, you know, one or two others. but it never happened. And I thought, right, well, I've had a good career as a player, and I think I've got to say that I've been grateful for every experience I've had. You know, if somebody was to tell me that when I was 10, this is what is going to happen to you, what an adventure.
Alex, it's been a pleasure, my friend. As always, it's been fascinating listening to you. Thanks for being with me on the podcast. Thanks very much indeed. Thank you. Don't forget, that's the podcast with Alex. And next Tuesday, every Tuesday, the podcast. Thanks for being with us.